you ever wonder what parenting is really like? Do you think that you're the only one that's struggling? Or have you missed out on that amazing hack everyone was talking about? Well, that sounds like you. Grab a seat and get comfy, as you'll be hearing real life stories from parents that are on the same collective journey, a little thing called parenthood. We'll hear from parents, caregivers, and experts as we fumble through this wonderful path together. I'm your host, Rashida, and welcome to the Parents Connecting Podcast. Hi everyone, it's Rashida and welcome back to the show. We are officially in season two, kicking off season two. Can you believe it? It's September. It's really insane that the summer has come and gone just like that. And I don't know about your summers, but mine went just like in the blink of an eye and it was so busy. I think we had, you know, between the family and my husband, there was a lot of travel, a lot of family visits, a lot of social gatherings, which was great. But it was very, very busy and probably busier than we'd had in several years, especially with the pandemic, right? And just a quick note, you know, my husband is Moroccan. And so we have, you know, immediate family and an extended family that live in Morocco still. And so I wanted to send my thoughts and prayers to all those who are affected by the recent earthquake in Morocco. Luckily and thankfully, our family, our immediate family, was all accounted for, but obviously not so many people were that lucky and fortunate. So sending thoughts and prayers to anyone that has family there. And if you're interested in donating to the cause, I'll put a link in the show notes. You can Facebook me or DM me, and I can also send you a link there. So for this episode, we're going to go ahead and kick it off. I'm really happy to be sharing this conversation with Karen Hall. And, you know, for my first show in season two, I wanted to bring on someone that I could relate to and resonate with on many different levels. And Karen was exactly that person. I heard parts of her story, of her birth story, and some of the challenges that she faced growing up and then going through parenthood on another podcast. And I just could relate to her story on so many different levels, specifically in her talking about her sensitive nature and her nervous system. And so in this episode, we talk about what's now coined as the highly sensitive person, which stems from the highly sensitive child. So you may have heard the HSP or HSC. Or you may or may not have heard the terms at all. But much of it relates to, you know, how your nervous system interacts with the world, how you interpret, you know, those around you, and people's emotions and environments can really affect you. And I was reading up on, you know, some of the traits that an HSP might have, and just to summarize it in the beginning, so you kind of get a sense of what we're talking about. And if you Google, you know, highly sensitive person, you'll come up with a plethora of articles. And so I picked a few from searches that I did just to give you guys a sense of what an HSP is if you've never heard the term. And it may relate to you, maybe not. If you're a highly sensitive person, you might have a heightened awareness of the stimuli around you, which can be good or bad. HSPs can be really creative and have a really deep level of empathy. And it's interesting because some studies have shown that the HSP brain is more active in areas relating to attention, emotion, action planning, decision making, and having a strong internal experience. And I think what that means is essentially, you know, if you're around somebody that's hurt or sad, you're going to feel that. You're going to feel that at just a very visceral level. And same way, joy. If you have kids and parents, you might just feel that level of joy and wonder so much more. And so you're just a little extra sensitive. You know, sensitive can have a negative connotation sometimes, but as it relates to an HSP, you know, it also can provide you a deep level of understanding of people. So if you've ever walked through life and think, and you know, people open up to you really quickly, or you just have this, you can understand people, you know, at a level that maybe others can't, you know, it might relate to you. And if it doesn't, maybe you have people in your life that, you know, you might have thought are really sensitive to things, and now you might know why. It's because they actually have a physical reaction to some of the stimuli in their environment. So So listen in. This is a two-part episode because we had such an amazing time talking. We're going to split it up because it is a lengthy conversation. So if you haven't taken the time to subscribe, subscribe now, hit the follow button, and so you don't miss the episode, the part two when it releases. All right, enjoy. Well, hi, Karen. Thank you so much for being on this show. I'm super excited to talk to you. I heard you on Jacqueline Baird's podcast, Motherhood Intended, and could resonate with your story. Just so much could relate to it. And so I'm really excited to talk to you and dig a little deeper into just your life experiences as a mom and as a wife. And so thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here with you.
Why don't we start with just a little introduction of yourself? Talk about maybe how many kids you have, their ages, how long you've been married, and where you're from.
Okay, well, I was raised in California, and my husband and I have just celebrated our 38th anniversary.
Wow, congrats.
Yeah, and so we have four kids, and now they're all married, and I have five grandchildren.
That's really great. That's really great. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was something that I discovered probably about a year ago, looking into just kind of trying to learn about my own children around like the sensory differences that people have. And then I went into this world of like sensory differences, and then I came across this thing called highly sensitive person. And as you were talking on the other podcast, I thought, you mentioned that you found yourself to be very sensitive, and you thought that your mom thought maybe your nervous system had something to do with that because you were born a preemie. And I wanted to dig a little deeper into that because A, I can relate to it. And B is because I didn't even know this was a thing really until probably maybe a little more than a year ago. And so what I wanted to do is start out with just maybe an introduction of how I came across the topic around the highly sensitive person. So I was looking for just like resources, as any mother would do, to like figure out what's going on with your children, how to better parents and all that kind of stuff. And I came across these traits around the highly sensitive child, which the woman that coined this, and I don't know if you're familiar with Elaine Aaron, but she came out with two books. And then there's obviously, if there's a child that's highly sensitive, then there's the highly sensitive person, which is the adult version of that. And so I went through the traits and I'm like, I think this is me. And so I wanted to just see what your experience with the sensitive part of a person. And I think sensitivity has such a sometimes a negative connotation, right? It's like, oh, you're so sensitive. But I think in terms of what this coin term of highly sensitive person, it really is like a constellation of traits that really talks about the nervous system and how in tune you can be with other people and how sometimes like feelings are just so much stronger. And so in that you end up maybe taking things more personally or things seem a little bit bigger than they are. So I'll pause there and kind of want to get your sense of maybe how, if A, you identify as a highly sensitive person, and if you do, like how you came across the topic.
Yes, I totally identify as a highly sensitive person. And I, you know, as we mentioned, as I was growing up, you know, my mother didn't really understand that. I mean, of course, they hadn't talked about it a lot, right. You know, that generation. And so, and my mom was worried about me, you know, she thought this child is getting her feelings hurt all the time.
Yeah.
And so she was trying to help me protect me. I didn't know that at the time, you know, that took me a while to figure that out as a child. I just knew that it was not a good thing. And I didn't really understand it, but I felt things so strongly and I still do. And I feel joy greater and yeah. I feel sorrow greater. And I like, I can't watch a movie, you know, like a documentary or based on a true story or something. I can't even watch a fiction movie. I can't watch movies that have a lot of drama in them before I go to bed, because I feel it so strongly and think about the person. And my husband always laughs because I like to go Google the real story.
Oh my gosh, I do the same thing.
Yes, we have to go to a movie if we're going to go to the theater, because I have to have time to think about something else. So I go to sleep. But as a child, I picked up on things real early. And
how so? So like, what do you mean by that?
Like I would pick up on when something was bothering somebody, I could tell that they were hurting or something. Sometimes I had dreams about things that, like when my grandpa died, I had a dream that he was going to die before he died.
Oh, wow.
So I was prepared for when he died of a sudden heart attack, and he didn't have any health problems. So
oh, wow.
It was a shock. But I often had things just like I could sense the energy, you know, of a certain, and I could tell. And this is what made it challenging as a child, because sometimes I could tell that somebody was thinking something. And sometimes I felt like they were thinking something because I misinterpreted it. And
interesting. So
I one of the first times that I can remember a story about me, you know, talking to my mom about this was I came home, I think I was 9 years old, and I came home and I said, you know, the teacher yelled at me today. And I was the most conscientious little student. I was on the front row, you know, just always listening. I love to learn. So I just wanted to hear everything and learn everything. And I was just quiet and obedient. So my mom was, she yelled at you, you know, my mom just couldn't believe it. So she goes and talks to the teacher, and the teacher says, I told the class, I did raise my voice, and I told the class to be quiet.
Oh, that's so funny. But you took it very personally.
And so that was the part that my mom, you know, was worried about. You're so sensitive, you know, and my mom didn't really know how to handle it. And
sure.
And it was exasperating. She had 3 kids in 3 years. And so, you know, it was a little, to take the time to help me process it was a little bit frustrating. But my father was very sensitive, mm-hmm. also. And he had more time. So after work, when he would come home, we would talk about things, and we would, my mom just, you know, was busier as
that. Right, of course.
And so my dad and I would talk a lot, and he could understand my sense, which is really interesting because my mom is also sensitive in a lot of ways, but my dad understood the way that I was sensitive. And so
how did he help? Did he like give you tips, or was this just something that he could relate to? And so then you felt more comfortable.
Yeah, I totally felt validated by him. And he would tell me, you know, that he would say the word gift. He would say, you know, you have a gift in this area. Well, believe him, because my mom, you know, was saying it in the more
opposite way. Right. Yeah.
And I had internalized that. So I thought it was a bad thing to be so sensitive. But my dad is a psychologist, and he said, you really should go into this field, because, you know, he said, I watch you with people, I watch you with children specifically, and you're so in tune, you can pick up really quick on what children need. And he said, you should be a child psychologist. And I looked into how long it was going to take. And I thought, oh my gosh, 6 years. Because I was paying for my own college. I ended up going 6 years anyway. But I later, as I, you know, was maturing, mm-hmm. I was realizing, oh, there is a good thing about this. And I started slowly to see where my gifts came into play. Like in college, I remember when my teacher, my professor would do a certain body move. She would tap the chalkboard a certain way. And I would put a star by that in my notes. And then when I would study with people, I would tell them, this is going to be on the test. And they would say, how do you know? And I'd say, I just know, I just feel it. And so then my friends in my class would sit next to me, and every time I wrote a star by my, they would highlight it. They didn't even have to study with me.
Wow.
They knew. And those things were always on the test. And so I started to see, oh yeah, this can be a gift. Well, then when I got married and I was very sensitive, you know, with my relationship with my husband, I defaulted to that's a bad thing. And my husband didn't know what to do. Wife, he's like, oh my gosh, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, you know?
Yeah. So how'd you deal with that? Because it sounds like you knew from a very young age that, like, A, it was nice that your parents actually were able to maybe identify it, maybe didn't know how to react to it or maybe like encouraged it almost. And then it seems like you almost harnessed it a little bit to like work in your advantage to some degree. And then you get into a relationship, which is like two people, maybe very different personalities come together, and you've been married, just at 38 years. So I'm very curious actually when you got into the relationship, were you aware of it in that sense? And then like, how do you, I've been married, this will be my 10th year getting married in the end of the year. And man, we've gone through like ups and downs, and a lot of it is because, you know, I think that
I didn't recognize it really. And so now I'm like, oh, well, you know, everything just seems, because I do feel something, like it's like it's a feeling. It's not even like a thought. It's just like a feeling of an intensity. And I'm like, and then I don't know what to say or do. So I'm curious, like, how did you navigate that in your relationship? And were you always aware? And then just how did you work through it? And it's still part of you. So like, how do you currently work on that stuff?
Oh, this has been the biggest challenge of our relationship. My husband was his adopted. He was the youngest of 8 kids. And when he was adopted, his parents were in their mid-40s. And so they weren't like, oh, we can't have a baby. We're so glad to finally have a baby.
Right.
Well, okay, we'll do this. You know, and they had 5 children already. And so they were 2 adopt, his brother and he were adopted.
Okay.
And they came from, well, his mom was born, I think, in 1919. And anyway, so we're talking like my parents' generation. So he skipped a generation in parenting where, you know, my parents learned so much more about, like, I remember my mom and dad reading parenting books and things. I think my grandma did.
Yeah, right, of course.
Positive, his parents weren't reading parenting books. And it was just like, we've got to figure out how to make a living. We've got all these kids. And it was just stressful. It was just very stressful. And so feelings were not talked about. And I remember when I would go visit his family, they would say to me, is that all you ever talk about is feelings? Don't you? I mean, like, yeah, why don't
we? We did not talk about feelings in my family. Like, if you cry, you're like, why are you crying?
and my husband would joke, because he would say, you know, in my family, if you cry, they'll say, you're crying? I'll give you something to cry about. Right. It was very different. And so another thing that was very different was my family was not sarcastic. I didn't even know what sarcasm. And so my family, if they didn't like something, they said, hey, I don't like that when you do that thing. You know, we were just upfront. But my husband's family, if they didn't like it, they would say, well, you know, you think you could do that better or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. I totally can understand. Like, it's almost like at least in the family that I grew up, it's almost like a passive aggressive, but like sarcastic kind of like like a jab a little bit.
And it would be said with humor.
Right.
And so my brain was trying to figure this out. I was always trying to figure out, do they really mean that? Are they really joking or are they not joking? You know, it was like so different for me. And I remember thinking and swearing. His family had a cattle ranch and they volunteered on this cattle ranch and they just were constantly swearing at the cattle. So swear was like not a big deal. In my family, we didn't say stupid, you know, we didn't call each other swearing. I think I heard a swear word once or twice and it was just like unheard of. So when my husband swore at me the first time, I was just like, sarcastic and he swears. Oh my God, I too, exactly. So that was a huge thing for me because I misinterpreted those things. And I talked to him about it in the beginning, but it was so ingrained with him that he just didn't even think of it. You know, sometimes say it. He worked on it and then he would say it only when he was mad, but then that kind of made it worse. So we had to talk a lot about it. And it got to a point where sometimes my husband was tired of it. I mean, honestly, be totally honest and fair. And I realized I really had to do some work on me, you know, because I had to, I mean, he was busy supporting his family, I mean, our family, and then his family. So we bought the family business that was bankrupt. And then by the grace of God, we were able to turn it around to make a living. But the very, very stressful years financially, and he was just taxed to the limit. I mean, just we'd work until midnight. He'd get up at 4 in the morning and off he'd go again. And it was very, very stressful. And that was when we'd only been married 3 years at that point. It came real soon. And so I realized I really have to do a lot more work on me. And so I prayed a ton.
Yeah.
I sought out counseling. We lived in a very rural area and there were not good counselors. So I couldn't find anything. So kept trying. Every time I would, you know, there was another opportunity, I would try again. But I read a lot. And that's when I came across the highly sensitive person. And I read out Elaine Aaron. And I was like, my gosh, a gift. Oh my gosh. And then I saw those pieces together, those little moments when my dad would tell me, you know, that I had this gift or little things that I had totally forgotten about. And so then I started saying, okay, now I want to use my gift to recognize the truth of what is really being said. You know, what is person really feeling? And now I can describe it like with nonviolent communication, you know, Rosenberg, you know, how he says, what is the unmet need behind what that person is saying? Well, if I would have known that a long time ago, wow, that would have made a
change things, right? Yeah.
I'll change things for me. And I wouldn't have gotten my feelings hurt because I would have said, that doesn't have anything to do with, not anything. That doesn't 100% have to do with me. It has more to do with them than it does with me. And I recognize that. I remember the first time somebody said that to me, it was foreign language. I was like, what do you mean it has less to do with me? That I'm the one directing it all at. Talking about me, my behavior, how I annoy them. And so I don't understand how you can even think that. Yes, it has everything to do about me. But it took time, you know, and experience and practice and revelation. I mean, honestly, I had so many things that would come to me where it would be a huge paradigm shift. And I would be, oh, that's what's going on. And then when I was able to, so first of all, I would become emotionally dysregulated.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Can we just talk about emotional dysregulation for a minute?
Yes, we can talk about that so much because I would feel so triggered. And I didn't realize that a lot of it did go back to feeling like there was something wrong with me.
And do you think that do you, because part of, in addition to like learning about the highly sensitive person, that also stumbled across how trauma can affect you as an adult, and not just like the trauma as we think of very acute instances of like an accident or some sort of abuse or something that's really like, absolutely, like everybody can, you know, term this as trauma, but there's a whole thing about just how you're raised. And again, like our parents, I think in general, always want the best for your children. But like you mentioned, like, you know, your husband's generation, your parents didn't necessarily read the parenting books, right? Like I come from that. Like my parents are immigrants and like, you know, they're worried about just, like you said, trying to get food on the table and raising children and, you know, speaking the, you know, emotional language is like not even in the vicinity of parenting.
Yeah.
And so that all does affect. And now, I mean, obviously, like as we evolve and grow as people, we learn more things. And so it's interesting, even how your do you find that even how you were maybe raised, like affected how you like showed up today as a person? Like, do you find that it's even relevant or it's related?
Absolutely. 100%. And my trauma, you know, as you probably listened I was born premature and I was 2.5 mature. So I mean, it was scary. It was a scary world. And a lot of things scared me that probably wouldn't scare other people, but they did scare me. And I was a little bit shy and my mom had to really encourage me to do things. I mean, you probably heard me say that she would read me the book, The Little Engine That Could. And that was my favorite story. And it's still my favorite mantra. And so I did, that trauma did affect me. And it also affected me. Like this is something that's really interesting that took me a while to realize that I was very different. If somebody yells at me, and even if they just raise their voice at me, I mean, not even like yelling, but just voice at me, I have this like electric current that goes through my body. And I can sometimes start to shake because it is scary. Feeling is so intense. It is scary to me. And I didn't deal with a lot of anger in my upbringing. And so like I'm saying, the anger, when I deal with somebody that's very angry, it can be very not dysregulated.
It's like a shock. It's like a shock to your system. And I can really relate to it. And it's so interesting talking to somebody that can relate, because I think that's what I find the most almost like validating, because sometimes when you're talking and you tell somebody actually that they're yelling at you or that, you know, and they're like, I'm not yelling. And that's even more validating. I'm like, you're raising your voice and you're obviously mad. And so, and you start interpreting all these meanings from what their elevated voices, because like you said, you really can feel it. And I get to a point where I did deal with anger as a child. Like, you know, my dad was just, I think, just the stress of life, right? Like, and we went through, there was a lot of calamities and like, I think in their relationship and just overarching family stuff. And that trickles down. And so, absolutely had no idea back then, but like, I could sense something was wrong. And I was always the person that would try to make things lighthearted. So I was like the jokester of the family.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, so when somebody's angry or I'll get really self-conscious. Like if you're ever out somewhere and somebody's yelling, and even if they're not yelling at me, if somebody's yelling at somebody else, I still feel that, which is like crazy to me. So I don't know if you can relate to that.
Yes, I can. And I can totally relate to somebody understanding, because I remember when my husband asked me something about why I reacted the way that I did. Yeah. And I was telling him about feeling this electric current coming through my body. And he said, "Are you serious?" He said, "No wonder you feel it so strongly." And he said, "Especially when I get upset," he said, "because I don't feel that." And so it was very enlightening for both of us, you know, when I was mm-hmm. able to articulate that to him. And yet when other people have told me they feel it, I'm like, "Thank you for understanding." for many years, I felt so alone. I just I didn't think I was crazy, but I felt alone and I felt weird. You know, I like,
like the world's burdens are on you because you just feel like, I like, to me, it's like, I feel if somebody's telling a story, I'm almost them, or like in the, like, I can feel what they're feeling in that moment. And I feel so bad. And I think one of your, you know, the gifts is you can really empathize with somebody because you can almost put yourself exactly in their situation.
Yeah. Cause I remember one time I was talking to a woman and she was going through a terrible divorce, and I was just, you know, validating her. And I was coaching her but just as a friend, you know, I mean, and she said, she didn't know me that well. And she said, "Have you been divorced?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Yeah, just like you've been divorced. Like you totally understand it." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I just feel what you're feeling. I mean, I can understand the feeling, you know, I mean, we all feel lonely. We all feel, you know, I understand the feelings." And she goes, "Yeah, but you understand it on such a different level." She goes, "You're even better than my therapist."
Right. Like, you must find yourself being, or maybe it's a question, like, do you find yourself that people just generally open up to you way quicker, way faster, and at a much deeper level because you have that? I feel like if you are a sensitive person, you're able to like provide that validation. Everybody's look that everybody in this, like, I feel like on this planet needs, like, to be seen, to be heard, to be validated. And often if the person that you're talking to doesn't, you just will stop one layer short. But it sounds like you were doing that, because I know you have a coaching business. And so it sounds like you were even like people just empty, you know, like just got went on and told you about their life. And
my husband always says, "We can't go anywhere fast with you because you have this sign across your forehead that says, 'Tell me about your life.'" I mean, the career, you know. He just laughs about it because he said, "I can't believe what you learn about people, like on the air."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll get to know the person and they'll tell me their whole life or whatever. And he's just like, weird. And he said, "And the other thing that's weird is you actually like listening." He said,
I do. Yeah. I love it. Like, I love to hear people's stories. If I'm going to like a party or something, and you know, like me and my husband are a little bit opposite in that. Yeah. And so I want to hear somebody's story. You know, he likes to talk and tell us those sorts of things.
Yeah, I totally relate to that. But so, yeah, so that has been, that was what was so interesting was, after I did go to college for 6 years anyway, because I changed my major. But anyway, so I was a journalist and my favorite thing was to interview people for stories. And I did all the feature articles and investigative reporting and things. And so then, you know, as time, and then I became a dietitian, and that was health coaching. And so then I was always being the detective to find out what was the obstacle that they were facing. And then I started doing relationship coaching and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And so it has been something that brings me a lot of joy. And it's not just like, oh, you know, I have to do this, or, oh, this happens or whatever. It's something that I feel so fulfilled doing. So
yeah,
it brings me up.
So how long have you done relationship coaching, and did you find any of that helpful or challenging maybe while you're doing it? And did you have your own relationship challenges? Like,
yeah, no, I was doing relationship coaching for over 20 years. And before that, I was always trying to work on my own relationships.
Okay, right.
So that's why I felt like when I would learn something, I would get so excited. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to help somebody else so that they don't suffer. And that's been my whole, you know, I get kind of emotional when I say that, but my goal in life is to help people learn from my experiences so they don't have to suffer like I did. And so that helps.
That's so wonderful. And you're writing a book too, right? Tell me a little bit about your book, and are you incorporating your struggles? Because I think I can totally relate to that. And I think a lot of people can. It's like you go through trials and tribulations in life. And I think sharing them is a great cathartic experience to some degree. And then also exactly what you said, it's like being able to share your story so that it can help somebody else. So if somebody doesn't feel so alone, yeah. somebody knows that they're not the only person thinking this, and it's just like this collective connection that you can provide by just sharing your story, really.
And you know, that's exactly why I did the podcast, because I was writing the book first and I was interviewing people. And so I'm including their stories in with my story. And so, you know, like we were saying, I love to hear their stories and I love to ask questions. And so that's why I started the podcast, because I thought, well, anybody can listen at any time. And the whole reason I started that was because I didn't want someone to feel alone, because being in the very rural place where I lived, I did feel alone. And I was around a lot of people that didn't talk about feelings, not just my family, but a lot of the families in that very small town were like that. And so I didn't have a lot of people. I had one girlfriend from college, and she and I talked about our feelings together all the time. And my husband said to me, "Do you think that we could get the phone bill lower than our house?" And I'm like, "No, do anything." So,
it's like, I need this. This is part of my self-care.
Exactly. I was like, I have to have my connection with her.
I mean, it's interesting what life was like pre like social media and all this stuff. You did actually pick up the phone and talk to somebody for a couple of hours.
What's so interesting is now my grandchildren are listening to my podcast. And so,
oh, that's so sweet.
They're like, "Grandma, we didn't know that story. And Grandma, that's so neat how you learned that thing," you know, because I tell my kids, and now they're teaching my grandkids, but even my kids say, "I forgot that, you know, I forgot that thing." And so that's been really special to me too, because I didn't think that my grandkids were going to want to listen to my podcast, but they're like, "That's our bedtime story before we go to bed."
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I think, and this is my own perspective, like I feel my parents' lives, they're so rich with experience and wisdom and trials and tribulations, because each generation that comes, you know, below, they'll have suffered their own problems. Right. And it's all relative. And so I feel like everybody's problem is still a problem. Like when people minimize somebody's problem, because it is in your range, is still a problem. But by sharing your story, I think, especially if you're in a family that doesn't have the free flowing conversations about prior experiences and all that kind of stuff, that's great that you have a platform that actually you can share your own experiences. And so your grandchildren, I'm sure, like get a different insight into their grandma, right? I think that's, there's so many stories I think of my own parents and my grandma. I just don't know, because they, you know, we don't sit down at the table where we live in different states. And it's like, you don't have the opportunity to talk really all that much. So I think that's wonderful.
You have the recorded version, you know, because like my dad, I would carry around, ever since I was a young girl, I would carry around tape recorder. First, before we had tape recorders, I would just write stories. I would interview him and write down his story. Because his dad was born in Norway and his mom was born in Ireland. So they were very close. I love to hear stories. "Well, so how did you do it? So la, la, la." You know, I just asked him questions all the time. And my mom too. And my grandma. I mean, I was always interviewing everybody.
So really? Even at such a young age? Oh, that's so awesome. Okay. So
then when I got a tape recorder, and then I could carry a tape recorder around, you know, I was tape recording everybody. And so now my kids are tape recording and they're saying, "This is perfect because you're tape recording for us."
Have you ever had an interview with your parents?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Okay.
I have video, you know, with my dad, and I'm working on it with my mom. So.
Oh, that's so really, like, that's so great. I think that's an opportunity that a lot of people don't get. And some parents don't necessarily want to share their own experiences. I think it depends on, like, you know, where they come from and stuff, but what an offer, like, that's so wonderful.
My kids gave us for Christmas this book where it gives you a question every week. Yeah, and that has been really fun. I haven't been as diligent because I was so busy doing the book and the podcast, but I loved it. And my husband, I mean, we had so much fun hearing his stories and things too. And so anyway, we're working on that. And that's something that we're going to do for our kids too.
Oh, that's great. So then what's some of your, talking about like trials and tribulations, because part of this podcast is really to share experiences that are what I would consider like under the hood, because I think social media and the movies, just pop culture, right? You see something and you think, "Oh, well, you know, when you get married, it's fairy tale kind of things that is portrayed," which is part of people's relationships. I'm not saying that it's not, but there's like a whole other aspect of life, which includes not just calamities and trials and tribulations, because I think every relationship gets stressed, every family gets stressed with sometimes internal stressors, sometimes external stressors, somebody, you know, like birth and death are all part of life, and that causes stress. But I think that, you know, I want to almost highlight that there is this other aspect of life that people don't view, especially now. I think our younger generation is only seeing this very polished and, you know, pictures after pictures after pictures. And it distorts, I think, what life is really like and what it can be like. And so when you get into a situation where you're stressed, or you're having a difficult relationship or a difficult family, like mom to child or father to child, like, you know, experience, you almost think that it shouldn't be like this. And you also feel, I think, just from some people that have, you know, I've talked to, have felt alone in the situation because they almost are embarrassed for it. And so part of the show is to, like, just talk about regular experiences that are just part of life, so that it showcases real life, I guess, for lack of a better word. And so I'm curious, what are some of the challenges that you've had as you became a parent? Like, what kind of things did you endure? And just kind of talk about some of your experiences, really.
Money was an interesting thing because I saved every penny I had because I bought my own car. I, you know, paid for college myself. I went to go visit my relatives in Norway when I was 18 because it was so important for me to connect with my relatives. And my mom was like, I don't know where you think you're going to be able to get the money to go to Norway. Ever since I was a little girl, I told her, because I would write letters to, and I said, I'm going to go see them. And she's like, we're not paying for it, so I don't know how you're ever going to go. There's no way. Get rid of that idea. She didn't say that. She just said, she would just always say, I don't know how you're going to do it. And I said, I'll get a paper route. I'll get a babysitting job, whatever. So when I think I was 10 when I got my first paper route.
Such a driven kid. Wow.
I was, and I've always been driven by family connection. And so my husband, he's the youngest of eight. By the time he came along, his parents weren't as, you know, how you get more relaxed as, you know, you go down.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
By the time he came along, and if he needed money, they just gave him money. And so then we get married and I'm like, wait a minute, you know, we have a budget. You know, I had to have a budget to make it through school. And so he's like, a budget. And then when we moved back to buy the bankrupt business, I mean, we were so poor. I mean, so I had us on a budget and we knew every penny in and out. But when we were losing $20,000 a month, and we were having to take out loans, and that was, you know, 35 years ago. I mean, it was just like, I can't even fathom these numbers. And my husband, you know what, don't even look at it, because that's just too stressful for you. He said, I'll take care of it. So we kind of had a switch, and it was very interesting, because I will spend money on the most important things. Like, I will find money for that phone call, eat beans if I have to, you know, for weeks. It's just because I do have my priorities that I will spend. And most people are like that. If something is really important to them, they will figure out a way. Eating out is important. Eating out was not important to me. I was more than happy to cook at home and eat home cooked food, and to pack my lunch. Nope, no problem whatsoever. So, but my husband, he wanted to eat out. That was something that was very important to him. And so we had these differences that would come up. And then in raising kids, so when my kids were young, I started them on this program where they had to earn everything. So they had to earn their lunch money, and they had to buy their own clothes, and they had to, you know, they got paid for everything, practicing and doing chores or whatever. But I wanted them to know the value of money, because my husband had such a different take on money than I. And he was horrified by it. So if they didn't want to spend the money on a new pair of shoes, and they had holes in their shoes, then they went to school with holes in their shoes. And my husband was like, Karen, children go to school with holes in their shoes. I'm going to look like a terrible husband, father, you know, terrible provider. And I'm like, it's okay. That's how they learn. And if they in the water, that's how they learn that they need to buy a new pair of shoes.
It's hard. I mean, I think it's really hard when you have such different parenting styles, because, and I think that's again how you grew up.
Yeah.
And how do you mesh them, and who somebody has to compromise sometimes, because it's not always like you can do both. Right. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't.
That was the tricky thing. We couldn't do both. And so, you know, so my husband would say, okay, fine, I'll buy them clothes at Christmas. it better last all year, because then they're going to buy their own, you know? So that's kind of what it. He would, but not always, because we didn't have the money to do that, you know, and for many years. And so money was an interesting thing with my kids and my young kids. So then after the older two got older and I was doing it with the younger two, my husband said, I'm done with this program. I really, because it did cause some conflict, because my older kids were going to get frustrated and how kids don't have to do this. And he said, no, he said, we have enough. I just don't want to do this anymore. And I wanted my kids to buy their own cars. And he said, no, he said, absolutely not. His parents bought his car. So he was like, I can buy them a car. So we did to make some changes. But my younger kids said to me, how could oldest daughter, you know, she just manages her money. She went to school. She had no debt. She graduated with no debt. She went to law school, no debt. You know, she got scholarship.
Wow.
Everything. But what was interesting was all of my children have learned financial skills, even the youngest ones. And so they've gotten scholarships. They've all, you know, gotten through and have managed. And so even the ones that didn't have the very strict still learned. And so it's not to say that one way is right and one way is wrong. I felt strongly about the way that I was doing it. My husband felt strongly the way he would do it. So we kind of compromised. We did my way, but we did his way.
It's really a trial and error to some degree.
And maybe I was wrong. And maybe we could have done it his way the whole way along and it would have turned out fine. I don't know. But
do your kids remember? Do your kids remember like how they had to buy their own things and earning? Like how young were they were like, when you started with the older ones?
10. I think they were around 10 when I started, 9 or 10 or so. But they really value money and they really do think about, you know, how much is this going to cost, and they're good budgets, and they've done really well. And so, but the younger ones are doing great now too. So I can't say that, but we talked about money. I mean, I still talked about money with the younger ones, even when, you know, my husband did buy everybody a car.
Yeah. No, I think some of it's just modeling. Like if you're doing it yourself, a lot of stuff that even if you're telling your kids one thing, but you're doing something different, what you're telling them is going to like go in one ear and out the other. Cause they're like, well, you don't do that. So I think some of it is just, I'm sure that you're obviously seeing very skilled with managing money and learning the value of a dollar, that I think that sort of like through osmosis kind of gets in through the kids because they see you working hard and putting the value of what you value. And like you said, like people value things differently. Yeah. So somebody might want a bag or an expensive purse or something, and somebody might really value an experience and travel. And it's really just where you put your thing. Because I find that, like, you know, they always say like money, there are like three prongs of like relationships that are challenging, right? Like money, religion, and I don't know what the other ones are, politics, I don't know. But, you know, it's like when you start talking about differences in what you value, that's when it becomes a challenge. Because even parenting, like parenting styles are very different.
You could ask about parenting style. So my family was, like I said, we talked about feelings a lot. I talked to both my parents about my feelings a lot, and my husband did not. And so his focus was work. And so I worked like crazy, you know, I didn't work at the expense of feelings. And so when we were raising our kids, parenting was very interesting because my husband would, he would say, the only reason that a child doesn't obey is because he's not in enough pain. Sorry, but you know, his father would give him a whack on the head, you know, if he was disobeying or whatever. My family never did that. I was getting spanked a couple times and very seldom, you know, it was so seldom, but I did get spanked, I think 3 times. And I never wanted to disobey again. And my family reasoned with me, you know, we just talked about the consequences and things like that. So when I had kids, and I would say like our first child she has a very strong will. They all have strong wills, but she had a little more feisty in her strong will, like verbally. And so she'd scream. If you did that, just scream. And I remember my husband was just like, and his family was just like, shut her up. So, they wanted me to do things like force her, you know, to be quiet. And so I found these pictures of little faces and I would point to, she was not able to say words, you know, like feelings words, but I would talk to her like she could. And I would say, you know, how do you feel? And she couldn't tell me. So anyway, so I got these little pictures and one was a sad face. One was a happy face. One was a scared face, you know, little emotions. So I would hold the little cards up and I would say, show me which one you feel. And we used that until she could say the words. And as soon as she could point to the face, she could emotionally regulate. And I was...
Oh, really? So it was just, that's so interesting. You were so ahead of your, I mean, like, cause that's, if you're ever like on any social media platform, you follow any sort of parenting thing, that's all, at least in the, cause I have young children, 2 and 5, and that's the, like, I don't know, the pool that I'm swimming in right now of all the things to help children emotionally regulate because they don't have the words or the language. And so like the picture, you know, they have all these charts that you can get with the pictures. So you were like way ahead of the curve and doing it, you know, way back then. So
I answered a prayer because I didn't know how to help her. You know, I talked to her, but she couldn't talk back to me, you know, to tell me what it was. And touch was very important. And so I remember, you know, pulling her close to me and hugging her. And I remember there were times when she just would get so upset, but I would try and just stroke her leg, or, you know, or just pat her or whatever. She had night terrors when she was little. So she's very sensitive too. And she would just wake up just screaming and her eyeballs be wide, you know, open, you know what was going on. And I would just stroke her and say, "It's okay, mom's here," you know. Got it. So parenting, we had very different styles of parenting because of the way my husband was raised, and the way that I was raised, and then what we thought was important. Another thing that was extremely important to me was.
Well, are you interested in hearing what was really, really important to Karen? I am. And the rest of the conversation was just as good as the first. And I wanted to leave it to a place that hopefully hooks you because Karen's insight into the world, even before things were popular, was really amazing to me. So tune in next week. You'll hear part 2 of the episode. I hope that you enjoyed this and got something out of it. And follow me on Instagram and, you know, join the Facebook group, Parents Connecting. All the information for Karen will be in the show notes. And I hope that you tune in next week to hear the rest of our conversation. Until then, happy connecting.